You are listening to Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the National Bicycle Dealers Association.
Welcome to Bicycle Retail Radio, the bicycle industry podcast that brings retailers, vendors, advocates, and thought leaders to the mic for honest discussions around the latest issues facing retailers while taking an in-depth look at the person within the profession. This is Heather Mason, NBDA President, and today we are spotlighting one of our NBDA retailers. The conversation today is with Benjamin Alexander, the owner of Southwind Cycle and Outdoor, with two locations in Kansas. Ben has brought boutique retail to Iola, whose population sits around 5,343. You are going to learn a lot over the next hour. We touch on serving the needs of every customer that comes in your door, the importance of word of mouth, how brands can support premium products in rural areas, and how important it is to continue to evolve, analyzing expense and margin while adapting operations to stay profitable. Let's get into it. Hello. Welcome, Ben. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So much to dive in here. When we think about Kansas, we think about the Wizard of Oz. I want to get into opening a boutique store, offering a boutique experience in a rural town, a rural population, 5,500 people. Opened the store in 2018, Iola, Kansas. Recently expanding into a second location in Pittsburgh, Kansas in March of 2022. There's so much here, so much for our listeners that I know it's going to be a great conversation. Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for recording this morning. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, you're part of our P2 program and I've gotten the pleasure to get to know you over this past year, and running a profitable bicycle retail store in a town that's not a tourist location. We're not talking about a mountain town that sees a flood of summer tourists. You're serving your local customers and giving them an opportunity to not have to drive 2 hours to find a cool bicycle retailer. You're now right in their local community. That population I mentioned earlier, 5,000, just a little over 5,000 people. I mean, let's talk about that, Ben. I think that's the conversation I really want to get into with our listeners here. How can we be successful? I mean, come on.
I think we're in a unique spot. You know, talking to other retailers, I think we are very small. And then there are, kind of like you said, there are a handful of retailers that operate at our size and towns our size, but they tend to be in places that are scenic and touristic, you know, maybe on the Great Divide Trail rather than rural Kansas. And I think part of what makes that possible is that people are excited to have something nice in a small town, even if it's not the small town they live in, even if it's the next county seat over. They're excited to have a high quality customer service experience. They're excited to have access to some higher end consumer goods that they otherwise might have to buy online. They're nervous about buying online, or they might have to go to the city and, you know, deal with. Not that larger retailers are no good, but a lot of people are nervous about dealing with a larger retailer. And so they're very excited about having a small town bike shop. So we've gotten a lot of support. You know, I think we're about 90 miles away from any metro area. It's a small town that's not in the orbit of anything else. And they're excited about having something else going on. The other important factor is that Iola, Kansas, where our first shop is, when the shop was started in 2017 by a friend of mine, and then we took it over in 2018. This town had just built a bunch of single track. There's a rail trail. We are on the Race Across America route. We're nearby the Transamerica route. So there's a steady trickle of tourists throughout most of the season. And then here locally, it's just something to do. You know, there's not a lot of recreational opportunities in rural Kansas. And bicycling has really jumped out in front, partially because we're here and partially because of the trails kind of working together. And then, of course, overhead is inexpensive in a rural area.
I'm thinking about Kansas. I'm thinking about fantastic gravel riding. I like that you just commented on that you are on some of these pre-existing, you know, more known routes. Are you finding that you're reaching new cyclists, so specifically youth or people who maybe you know, they are walking by and they notice the shop and they stop in? And are you seeing an uptick in the e-bike customer? Just your experience with reaching new customers, or what your clientele looks like.
You know, like I said, we're the only bike shop within 60 miles in any direction. So we serve everyone. And that means mostly new cyclists or people who are maybe have been riding a bike for a long time, but it's not really an important part of their identity. It's a fun thing to do on the weekend. So, you know, a lot of people who have just gotten a bike for exercise or got their first bike 20 years ago and are pulling it back out of the garage. You know, I think our highest selling category last year was e-bikes. And the 2 years before that, it was, you know, in a close race with entry-level hybrids for our best-selling category. So e-bikes, you know, rural Kansas is a little bit older population. I think the rural area of a lot of states is going to be an older population. And people are really open to pedal-assist e-bikes and really nervous about the proliferation of, you know, they search e-bike on their phone or tablet at home and hundreds of brands start showing up for them. And they get nervous and want to come talk to an expert. So our staff here and in Pittsburgh can guide them to something that's going to be safe, something that's going to fit within regulations, and something that they're actually going to enjoy. And people are excited about that customer service experience.
People are excited about the experience for sure. I was in Bentonville, Arkansas at Outer Bike, and one of your customers actually was at Outer Bike. And it was great having this conversation and connecting. And he could not stop raving about how fantastic your store was and the experience he had there. Super interested to see and to learn more, hear from you about your expansion into deciding to open the second location in March 22 in Pittsburgh, Kansas. How did you realize there was a need, and how did that come about?
So since we opened, kind of our nearest competitor was in Pittsburgh, a longtime retailer. He started at the end of the road bike boom in the early 2000s and really kind of carried the torch for road cycling. And Pittsburgh is a little bit larger town. You know, it's a big town by Kansas standards, about 30,000 people. It's one of our state universities is there. And so I was familiar with him from, you know, way back when I rode road bikes to go fast. That retailer decided to, you know, he got through the pandemic and had a good couple of years and decided it was time to move on to other stuff. So that really left a major opportunity and a community underserved. And I think we had enough time here to kind of figure out how to run a retailer in a small town and how to kind of deal with the cultural differences of rural Kansas, really make sure that we're both profitable on the back end and then serving customers in the way that kind of meets their needs and meets them where they are. And so we opened the Pittsburgh store in March, and like every new location, it's been kind of a bumpy road, but I think things are going really great right now. And we're looking forward to the 2023 season for sure.
Yeah. I mean, March 22, you know, the past couple of years going through COVID with the over inventory now, you know, going from no inventory to over inventory, it's been a lot to navigate. I want to just rewind a little bit, Ben, and you said that Southwind was already established and you purchased the business from a friend in 2017. So tell me maybe about any changes that you've made or just what that process looked like and what you're doing prior, I guess, too.
In 2016 and 2017, I was working in the economic development office here in this small town, writing grants and trying to get people to move in and build factories by the airport. And also one of my tasks, kind of a small one, was, hey, you're the bike guy in the office. We need a bike shop here. Convince somebody to open a bike shop here. So kind of went around to different retailers and planted the idea in their heads of, hey, what do you think about the idea of expanding? And ran into one of my old friends that was very much ready to expand. And expanded from suburban Kansas City to another suburb and to Iola. And I think they had a good time in Iola and enjoyed the town. But it's hard, you know, and now I'm finding this out. It's hard to run a bike shop at a distance of 70 to 90 miles away. And so the following year, when I was kind of looking for something else to do, they were looking to either wind things up or move it to somebody else, to new ownership. And so that move to new ownership happened in September of 2018. And it's been really great. You know, before that, I got in the nonprofit field by doing a bike repair program with kids in Kansas City and driving a box truck full of donated bikes from school to school. And I'm giving away, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of bikes in Kansas City. So it's good to get back into cycling. And it's also good to be in one place and never be driving a box truck around Kansas City.
I would imagine that. So as an owner now, what does a typical day look like for you? Are you, you know, I feel like the bicycle retailer owner manager these days just juggles so many different things at one time. So with two locations, How do you spread yourself out? How do you make that work? So you're taking care of both businesses and also hopefully making some time for yourself as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a major benefit of a small town is, especially in the off season when we're not very busy, you know, I open the store at 11, which means that before that I can go for a trail run or a mountain bike ride or a gravel ride and, you know, get a whole part of my day in before even coming to the store. So that is a huge benefit of living in a place that's teeny tiny. And then the rest of the day, you know, it's never dull. And one day it might be that somebody's coming in looking for their stolen bike, or it might be that we have a really, you know, what was the high-end dirt jumper bike or downhill bike from 2005 has come in and the owner wants to get it fully back up to speed. So we're sourcing obsolete parts and getting all kinds of stuff together. And then 70 miles away in the Pittsburgh store, they're doing something similar and calling me every couple of minutes with questions about what they're up to. So it's definitely never dull.
Never a dull day. So why Iola? Did you grow up there? Give me a little bit of that background.
You know, you got to live somewhere. I lived in downtown Kansas City and was looking to move and kind of wound up here because of the economic development office. And then liked living here because a lot of those, you know, the trails and access to riding and some health issues. So
in the economic development, now proud owner of two bicycle stores, getting to know the bicycle trade industry, other retailers, just, I mean, what's your impression? What's your thought? You know, let's say, I don't know, 5 years or so. What do you think about the bicycle industry?
You know, I think like a lot of small businesses, there are a lot of us who, you know, as a group, small business owners aren't universally super business savvy. And I think something like the P2 project that really intentionally focuses on that is a huge benefit to keeping those businesses solvent. You know, there are lots and lots of small businesses that open with the best of intentions and then end up winding up, not because the people are bad at their jobs, not because the business isn't viable, but just because stuff on the back end wasn't working. And, you know, I saw a lot of that helping small businesses in that office and helping communities bring in businesses to their towns. The bike industry has that also. Another thing about the bike industry is that most people, most of the time, are pretty happy to be doing the work they're doing, which is great. You know, you can put a negative light on it and say, oh, there's people just doing it for passion and running vanity businesses, and that drives down margins for the rest of us. But what it means day to day is that I mostly talk to people in a good mood, whether it's vendors or industry reps or customers. Most people, most of the time, are having a good time, which is awesome. It's a huge change from all kinds of other businesses.
Yeah, I do like that, right? I feel very fortunate to work in an industry that I actually, you know, love. I'm a cyclist and people get excited about. Let's then dive a little bit deeper into the shop background. So for our listeners, you can go online. It's southwindcycle.com.
You'll have to forgive the website. I made it.
I think it's great. Let's not forget. Well, take a look at it, and listeners, and you can decide what you think yourself. But yeah, you know, I want to get into that. So when you took over the store, you're coming into a business that's already pre-existing. Did you make some changes right off the bat? Was there a website? What brands were you working with at the time? Let's get a little bit into the mission vision of Southwind and, you know, maybe how you kind of took the what was existing and made that into the culture it is now, the core values. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. So I took over the store soon enough after it was open that there wasn't a lot established. You know, probably the biggest benefit is that Paul, a guy who worked in the store before, built most of the cabinets and furniture in here, and I didn't have to build it, which is great. But there wasn't a whole lot of culture or mission and vision established. I think a really important thing, really the focus has been just on making sure that, you know, we own most of our inventory. We're not letting debt or inventory get away from us. We're running a sustainable business. We're making sure we're profitable. And then as we've grown, we've had to look a little bit more at what are the core values that we didn't write down. So, you know, if you ride your bike to work, you jump to the front of the line with getting a flat tire. You know, we're across the street from our county courthouse. So if you just got out of jail and you have to figure out a way to get back home, you know, we might have a bike in back that we're either waiting to scrap or waiting to give to you to get back there. We keep bikes back there for the local after school program. And at this time of year, when there's snow on the ground and not a lot of repairs coming in, we train new staff fixing those bikes and give them to kids. So that community involvement is definitely part of our culture and part of our deal. But I always wanted to turn the focus back to making sure that all of us here can pay our bills at home, you know, because we have bills. It's our job. This is what we do for a living. So that is really an important thing.
How has it been finding quality staff members, especially trained mechanics? Has that been easy? Have you been training people, you know, to your standards? I'm just thinking of a small town. You might not have a big, you know, pool to pick from.
It's training people. You know, you find good people, either customers or people you've ridden with or whatever, or even just dropping a line in the pond and seeing who comes up on an Indeed job search, and then really training and learning about the bike industry as they come in. You know, help. It is a really small business. I'm in Pittsburgh one day a week and Iola the other 4 days that we're open. So it's not like the shops are running without me very much, but it's really finding people who are going to be enthusiastic about the work we do and enthusiastic about the way we treat customers, and then training them. You know, it's a lot easier to train somebody to bleed a mineral oil brake than it is to train somebody to be compassionate to a homeless customer rolling in with their 10-year-old Walmart bike.
How many staff members do you have over the two locations?
Right now in the winter, we have 4 people on staff. We'll probably bring on 1 or 2 additional part-time people per location. In the summer, we'll end up with like 7 or 8 people, some of those working part-time.
You asked our listeners to forgive your website earlier. I think it's great, actually. But I did notice that you're not selling online. Was that a strategic decision that you made? And a little bit more about that.
The results of our online site, people looking for a certain bike during the pandemic would maybe find us. And we sold a handful of bikes that way, but we sold just the bike. They would give us credit card info over the phone and we'd ship the bike to them, or they'd come pick it up from a nearby metro area. And, you know, that's a bike that's no longer on the floor and a little bit of cash back in the bank account, but it's not a new customer. And so especially thinking of that as a pandemic specific thing, you know, I'm not terribly concerned about that traffic. And then the other kind of use of e-commerce is as clearance, just to keep your turns high. But that requires a level of dedication and focus that I think takes us away from what we're doing otherwise. We could probably compete with some of the major online retailers by, you know, consistently pricing our stuff a penny lower or putting in the right SEO terms, really making sure that we're working well with some off-the-shelf providers like Smart Detailing. But it's not what we do best. What we do best is serve people who come in the door. And that's also what's profitable.
I want to talk more about serving people who come in the door. I love that you're focusing on that and that you just specifically called that out. I'm thinking, you know, you are the bicycle retailer in town, so you don't have the competition that maybe some of the other retailers like in our P2 groups that are, you know, in major metros have, you know, 15 retailers within a 25-mile radius. I feel like your competition might just be to get new riders or to create new riders. So thinking about just ways that you're doing that, is there anything that has been successful for you to bring more people in the door?
Like any other hobby, it's word of mouth. You know, we have a lot of groups of riders in adjoining towns that might invite somebody from work to come on the bike ride with them, or they might mention to somebody that they've lost some weight because they're riding a bike or just feeling better because they're riding bikes with the family. And so those people bring in more riders, and making sure that we recognize that and treat everybody who comes in the door as a potential cyclist and kind of meet them where they are. You know, weight limit is a dirty word here. We try not to send people away who are, if somebody's excited about riding a bike, we'll find a bike for them. We sell, you know, I mentioned earlier that rural Kansas has an older population, regularly sell step throughs or adult trikes or recumbents specifically for folks with joint mobility issues or balance issues. So we're kind of a generalist retailer in a very small context. And sometimes that means missing out on our enthusiasts' sales. You know, sometimes that means somebody comes in the door and they're looking for, you know, they want their $10,000 e-bike fully rebuilt. And they look at the bike in the stand and they look at the grease on my hands and go, maybe I'll come back another day. But, you know, that's a pretty rare thing. I think most people recognize the passion and recognize that it's going to be a good shop.
That's a really great point you made. It's adapting your inventory for your customers and not just carrying what you want to carry as Ben, right, the mountain bike racer, or gravel, right?
I would love to have only high-end gravel bikes in here. That'd be really fun. But there's only a handful of people in our service area who care about that stuff.
Yeah, it's so true. So what brands do you carry? Are you comfortable?
Yeah, so we started with Kona, Haro, and Salsa as our main brands. During the pandemic, we had some brands kind of cycle through and brought on Marin as a partner last year to kind of help stock our Pittsburgh store especially. And then recently have started with Giant. We don't have a ton of Giant inventory yet, but I'm really excited about their product line. Is they hit that basic new rider demographic really well with their products. And then, you know, I think Kona does a great job. Kona and Salsa both do a great job of making interesting bikes for enthusiasts. You know, is there something odd or specific that you want, especially if it's made not to ride on pavement? Kona and Salsa have you covered. And then Haro is also is another great one for kids bikes and like general enthusiast riding.
Did you experience the same bike boom that we all experienced? I'm thinking in a rural town, maybe. Did you see an increased interest in cycling as we all did as well? And did you modify and do anything like pick up drop-off services or anything to meet customers during that time, their needs?
So thinking back to the timeline, the store opened in 2017. I took over in 2018. So I had just enough time before the pandemic started to have a store that was ready for it. We doubled our sales in 2020 and have had a great couple of years after that. So there was a huge upswing, partly because it was a relatively new store and the word was still getting out, and partly due to the pandemic. And those two things combined, I was very, very busy in 2020. The main change there was, I think it went, yeah, this can be like sort of a one-man show, something that can maybe pay my bills, something to do, to know this is a serious business, and we need staff, we need training, we need to pay attention to our financial practices. You know, we need to get serious about what we're doing.
Yeah. So expanding to two locations, is there anything that has surprised you? Going from one location to two is a big undertaking. They say like, once you do two, you could do three or four, but that second location. So is there anything that's kind of just caught you off guard or been the biggest learning curve with that?
I think it's definitely, I'm more comfortable with changes now and more comfortable with, you know, sometimes something isn't going to work. Sometimes you get somebody started who is maybe the best person who showed up that week and you need to start them next week, and they'll work out perfectly okay for 3 or 6 months. And then you'll have to go and cover for them for a while. And then also really keeping inventory correct in two stores. You know, I think we thought that balancing inventory between the two stores would be a lot easier. You know, we've got a size run of this bike between two stores and we'll just run the bike over to the customer. That hasn't worked. We really need to be thinking about it as two stores that share some management and share some buying power, but we're not selling each other's inventory. It just is too hard to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. So each store is 1,800 square foot. Is that correct?
Nobody knows your bike shop better than you. But the people who might come the closest are other bike shop owners who are facing the same day-to-day and long-term challenges that you are. Joining a P2 group is one of the most affordable ways to take a deep dive into your business alongside other bike shop owners who are experts in what you do. Reach out today so we can tell you more about how a P2 group can make a difference in your business.
Yeah, the Iola store is a little smaller, about 1,500 square feet, and the Pittsburgh store is about 1,800. They're small downtown buildings, you know, apartments upstairs, buildings built. I think both towns had wooden downtowns built in the early 1900s. Those burned down, and then brick was rebuilt, you know, 1910, 1920. And those are the buildings we're in.
How are you maximizing the profitability within the smaller space? I mean, how many bikes, let's say, are even on the floor, Bill, or what strategies have you used there to have a great service area, but still, you know, be able to show enough products?
Yeah. So we really focus on products that are going to sell. You know, I don't have a huge display of the Kona Process series. That's their full suspension mountain bike. I don't have a huge lineup of Giant Trans X's. what I do have is a whole lot of $600-$700 hybrids. You know, if you come in looking for a quote unquote regular bike, we've got your size and we've got two or three options for you. And then the other thing is, I think you kind of alluded to it, it does get a little stuffed in here. I think right now we have about 70 bikes on the floor in each store, which 70 bikes and 1500 square feet is a little cozy.
That's a lot. Yeah. Wow.
Gets a little cozy. And some of that is kind of back stock, you know, where we have one size on the floor and two or three in the basement or in the back. It's a little cozy. And I think, you know, I would like to have a little bit less inventory, similar to just about everybody else, having something available for most customers coming in the door most of the time is important.
Talking about e-bike sales for a second, are you seeing the growth? I'd say on average, most retailers I speak to are seeing an increase in e-bike sales. Have you seen that as well? And is it something that you're focused on as a retailer moving in, you know, 2023 and beyond?
You know, I think I've heard other people kind of talk about it as an equal partner to acoustic bikes. You know, we don't necessarily have electric and regular. We have electric and acoustic, or we have electric and non-electric, or pedal assist and non-pedal assist. So it's not something we're focusing on. You know, it is a much higher dollar and lower margin sale than if we sell 5 fitness hybrids, that might be a better day than selling one e-bike. But it's also easier to sell one bike than 5. So we've got both options. And yeah, we've seen a huge amount of growth. It's gone from something that we kind of dabbled in to our best-selling category this last year. And I think in 2021 and 2020, it was very close to tied with fitness hybrid for our best-selling category, just because people are excited about e-bikes and people are excited about quality e-bikes. They're excited about, you know, somebody might open a browser window at home and find that all of a sudden every ad online is about e-bikes, and they get confused and overwhelmed, and they just want to come to an expert and be reassured that a Steps or a Bosch or a Yamaha Sync Drive bike is going to be reliable, easy to service, and safe and fun for them. And also get the experience of riding it. I mean, the e-bike test rides go a long way.
Yeah. Do you notice a lot of people come into the store just for some education and knowledge? Do you feel like you're speaking cycling to a lot of people, and maybe sometimes they even leave, but they come to you because you're there in the community and they value your opinion?
Yes. Yeah. And especially with e-bikes, but with bikes in general, but especially with e-bikes, people will come in and say, I'm shopping for an e-bike. Here are some things I know. Here are some questions I have. And we'll have a pretty long and educational conversation, and making sure that I know what I'm talking about and that my staff knows what they're talking about has been the key sales tool for those larger sales. Really making sure that we speak Newton meter, watt, amp hour, voltage. We know the regulations really, really goes a long way, because it's a confusing world. I mean, it's a confusing world for retailers, and it's our full-time job. Imagine being a customer, you know, coming into the world of class 1, 2, 3 e-bikes, and just you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, there's so much to stay on top of these days, and so many different e-bike brands even that are coming out, and just the different parts and accessories. Listen, your website, back to your website. I do love it. There's some really unique things on it. And one is you have a whole page dedicated to New Bike Day, and it's pictures of your customers. So what was the thought behind this? And do you think that it's helped your business having this New Bike Day page?
Yeah, you know, the kind of the jokey behind the scenes thing is New Bike Day posts are the easiest social media we can possibly do. You know, I don't have to think about it at all. It's just here's a picture of somebody with their new bike. But people love seeing themselves and their friends. You know, we'll see those posts shared to personal pages. We'll see their riding buddies get on there and say, hey, you know, you just got that, you know, you just upgraded from a fitness hybrid to that fancy new gravel bike. I'll bet we're going to be faster on some local name for a hill that I don't even know where that is. You know, it's just a way to capture and share the excitement that somebody has for the first day they get on something new and exciting. You know, maybe it's their first nice bike as an adult. Maybe they brought in their, you know, 1994 Rockhopper, and it was a great bike for a long time, but it's, you know, it's old enough to have back pain and a mortgage now. So it's time for something new. So they're excited about, it's a way to share the excitement. Yeah. And it's very easy social media engagement.
It has to be so cool, Ben, to, I'm just thinking, you've got 5,500 people. I mean, the social hits, the connections, the network, everyone, you're driving through town, you must just see bikes out, and it has to feel great.
If I thought that I knew everybody on a bike when I lived in Kansas City, I really know everybody on a bike now. We'll definitely be riding around town or walking around town in the evening. And, you know, kids jumping on the trampoline in the backyard will go, "Hey, Ben," and yell about their BMX bike or yell about whatever grips they want to get. It's definitely fun to be like this integrated in a community, and this integrated with something that people love. You know, people in the small town, you're integrated in the community, whether you like it or not, but I'm integrated in the community with something fun that people enjoy, that they want to talk about. When they're out on a bike ride and stop by on a Saturday, they're happy. They're happy to stop by and say hello and catch up with what's going on and, you know, birth of grandchildren or whatever. It's a fun place to be for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to see the generations of riders just coming through your door eventually. And that has got to feel incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier the customer you ran into in Bentonville. He came in to buy an entry-level hardtail early on when I started the store and brought it back last year. And the thing was, he'd folded the saddle in half and had almost wrecked the fork because he'd been doing downhill laps at a bike park somewhere. And he's gone from like, "Oh yeah, you know, maybe I want to ride a bike around the gravel section where I live," to just being extremely enthusiastic and a pretty hardcore rider doing stuff that would scare me for sure.
So enthusiastic and so cool and speaks so highly of you and the shop and the team. So Kansas, I think about gravel riding. Like, has that been anything, the gravel reputation? And I'm sure there's some great rides. Have you seen an increase in gravel bikes? Is that anything you focused on? Or, I mean, you're speaking to serving your current customer, but is there anything there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, maybe our best-selling category is our e-bikes and hybrids. But when we talk about longer distance riding or enthusiast riding, we're pretty much talking about gravel riding. Yeah. We have mountain trails here. We're relatively close to Bentonville. We have mountain bike trails in the area. But what we don't have very much of is pavement. So we talk about, you know, people kind of getting more and more involved in the endurance and fitness side of our hobby. It's gravel riding. And, you know, the Iola store is pretty close to the sort of famous Kansas area, the Flint Hills. You know, we ride 20 miles to our west and the Flint Hills stretch out in either direction, north and south. So we have great riding. You know, our Thursday night shop rides are all gravel rides. We've got, you know, a core of riders that all have, you know, the specific hill they want to go up and ride on, the specific farmer they want to stop and talk to. And it's all gravel road riding because you can stop at the top of a hill and chat with somebody mowing his grass for half an hour before somebody else drives up, which is sometimes can be like, "Hey guys, did anybody bring lights? We got to get going." It'd be a lot of fun and definitely add the social to the social ride.
I love that. So you are doing group rides and special events to get people out and just connect with the community even more then.
Yes. In season, we do a Thursday night group ride. I think every year we've been open, we've tried some kind of larger event. This year, we'll be doing a long gravel ride in the Flint Hills on June 24th. It's definitely our deal, is actually getting out and riding.
I love that. So at part of our P2 program, you know, I feel like we're saying, okay, what are your challenges and what do you do really well? So if I had to ask you, you know, in your opinion, as a bicycle retailer, something that you think you do really well or excel at that you would share with our listeners, what comes to mind?
You know, I think that the strength of and what makes this work is being able to define the right product for customers and find the right service, really work closely with the, not necessarily the price expectations that people have when they come in the door, but the value expectations and exceed those value expectations and make sure that everyone gets treated as if what they're coming in looking for is really important and a priority for us. Because, you know, it is. That's how we keep our doors open. Whether it's somebody who doesn't have their driver's license right now and is riding to work, that person's ride to work and making sure that it's safe and an enjoyable experience for them is a priority in that moment. Or whether it's somebody who's looking forward to a major event this summer and thinking about what kind of bike upgrade they want to be able to have their best day at, you know, Unbound or Gravel Worlds or the triathlon they've signed up for, or whatever it is, that's a priority in the same way that commuters are. And, you know, you just never know what energy they're going to bring into your shop. And also, you have a better day treating people with respect than grumbling about crusty bikes.
You're giving me goosebumps. I love this. Making every customer and their needs a priority. It seems so simple, but I think too often we get like, just, hello, how can I help you? What brings you in today? And it's just going through the motions, but not really taking the time to connect to the why they're there and figure out their journey and make their needs a priority. Ben, you mentioned a bunch of brands you're working with, and recently you're expanding to Giant. Are you feeling like you're getting the support from suppliers, brands, and reps? And if the second part of that question is, how could suppliers, brands, or reps even help you more for any that are listening?
A large part of our customer base is farmers, professionals in the small towns, people who have sort of a middle-class income but live in a rural area. And a lot of what they like about our business is that we're bringing a premium product and a premium experience away from suburbs and to them. So it makes them feel like they're not really forgotten, you know, that we're not living in a forgotten area. Something that would be wonderful is for brands and vendors to sort of treat those kind of cracks in the market with as much attention as the suburban strip mall outside of every city. You know, every city has, you know, one county or one corner of the municipality, their incomes are all six digits, and there's a lot other market out there. That said, you know, I can't complain about the brands that I mentioned are the ones that I've kept because the reps have been very solid. You know, they kept us in bikes throughout the pandemic. We couldn't have doubled our sales in 2020 if we didn't have stuff to sell. And the brands that we'd worked with were really great at making sure that we had stuff to sell. And there are a lot of new riders because, you know, a lot of people got really excited about riding in 2020 and they bought, you know, maybe they wanted to buy a $500 fitness hybrid and they got a $2,000 gravel bike instead because that's all we had. But they've been excited about those bikes and riding. And that's a customer and a rider that was created because our vendors were able to keep us in bikes. You know, that would have been somebody lost if we didn't have a product to sell.
Yeah. So just remembering that bringing this premium product to a rural town and not forgetting about the area, of which it is easy just to focus resource and energy on more metropolitan areas. I love that. That's a good takeaway for reps, suppliers, or brands listening. Is there anything that's just super frustrating you right now about the bicycle industry? What, just like air out on air?
Well, I think a major distributor has finally figured out a backorder system, so I can't complain about that anymore. No, honestly, you know, we're really focused on what's going on in our area. You know, I think a lot of people have a lot of complaints about bicycle margins, but being relatively new to the industry, I don't expect to carry my business on bicycles. You know, our business is carried on service and to a lesser extent, accessories. You know, we sell bicycles because it's an important part of, if you don't have a bicycle, you don't have any bicycles to repair. If you don't sell bicycles, then people won't be bringing them back in for racks and bags and water bottles and tune-ups and new chains. But I don't expect that. I don't expect that to be how we pay our bills. So I would love there to be higher margins, but also recognizing the world I'm in, where it's a small business and we exist with our strengths and what we can do. And one of those things is being actually local and actually able to provide a customer service experience that no matter how good a call center is, they just can't do. And something that we can't do is dictate bicycle margins.
Focusing on those services you offer. So bicycle repair, are you offering fit as well or any other services that might be something, you know, instructional clinics or anything along those lines that where you're focused, where you can bring a little bit more margin into the store on services?
We do a little bit of fits every year. It's a pretty small part of our business. You know, thinking again about our kind of primary customer, they've never read 16 articles online about how a full fit is going to transform their riding experience and help them set a new PR. They come in with more focused complaints. You know, after I ride, my hands are numb. After I ride, my neck hurts. You know, I go for a ride and the muscles in my lower back are sore. So we do a lot of light fits to help people deal with those specific problems. And then instructional and community events. I mean, that's our deal. We do a lot of that stuff, helping people. And that's a way to get our faces out there too. You know, if we're doing some flat fixes or helmet fitting at a community bike event, that's us in the community in a way that we wouldn't be otherwise. And people bring their bikes and we say, well, we can't fix this at this event. You need more service. And then the following Monday, they're in the store.
Other ways that you're bringing people in the store, I'm imagining maybe radio ads or whatnot might be a little more affordable than in like a metropolitan area. Is that true?
Yeah, radio ads are very inexpensive in a rural area, but you know, it kind of, I think you kind of get what you pay for. It's because we're not reaching very many people, but just many people that we exist. So radio ads, social media ads. You know, I think the big thing about social media is that it returns very easily tracked metrics. I don't know whether that means business, but it's definitely easy to track what you're doing. And then almost every time somebody, you know, we're in two small town downtowns. So we get a lot of soliciting from, you know, the local cancer charity and the local high school and the local middle school and the local Rotarians. And we almost always contribute something to their silent auction or buy an ad for the annual dinner or whatever it is, because that's a group of people that are interested in their community and out and about and really helps us maintain a good name in the community.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, getting involved with your local chamber and other local businesses. And I would imagine that's even more important or, you know, something you would focus on that could be extremely impactful to your business.
If a group of kids comes in and stammers through asking me for a yearbook ad, I will place a yearbook ad. You know, it might not be the most amazing return, but those kids and their parents are going to remember the bike shop as a business that supported their thing. And they might, you know, that's the first time they've come in the door. The second time they come in the door, they might be looking for a bike.
What about 2023? Goals for the business, goals for yourself? What are you focused on?
I was talking earlier about how amazing it is to meet everybody's needs, but the last couple of years have been hard. You know, we went through pandemic, doubled the bike business, opened a second store. So really making sure that we're setting reasonable expectations for myself and for the store and making sure to still enjoy what we're doing is a major thing, because you can't bring that energy to your work if you're just cranky about being here in the first place and annoyed that there's bikes waiting and when there's business and everything's terrible when there's not business. So really trying to bring as positive attitude as possible and then recognizing that like that positive attitude comes from somewhere. We have to have enough staff, have the tools we need, you know, not be trying to split ourselves between a website and the real store. And then of course, you know, we have sales goals and service goals where we can be profitable and maintain our store into the next year.
Yeah, it's really looking at it closely each month, right? And staying on top of your business goals.
Yeah. And also, I mean, paying attention to margins. You know, when we talk about we want to meet this sales goal at this margin, that means as you split that down into different categories, that means we sell so many bikes, but also so much service. Also so many, you know, rack and bag sets, so many light sets. Making sure that we get such and such a margin on those things. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're working on right now is really making sure that in the coming year, we have margins where they need to be. So going through our service menu, maybe repricing some lower end items and making sure that we focus on where the profits are for our business.
Yeah, something that we talk a lot about in the P2 program, and I love having you part of the group. You know, I want to close it out here with a final question. It's going to be hard because I'm going to ask you to give your best or your top, which is, it's always hard to choose just one, but I'm sure you've gotten lots of business advice over the years. Is there any advice you've been given that really stands out as some of the best business advice?
The best business advice that I keep failing to learn is really have an excellent accountant on board from the minute you start. If you have an open bank account, you need a good accountant.
That's true. Yeah. One of the questions that came up in our P2 workshop the other day was, how often should I work with my accountant? I mean, Ben, how often are you working with your accountant?
Not often enough. The answer is at least once a month is how often you should.
Right.
Because, you know, you need to know what's happening with the business. It's hard to make good decisions if you're waiting until the end of the year to know whether you made money.
Yep. You got to stay informed, right? All right, Ben. So I'm sure there's going to be some listeners who want to reach out and just say, job well done. Way to impact a community. I mean, you have really made a huge impact in your community. They might have questions, you know, that maybe we didn't dive into something deep enough. Now they might have some questions for you. Would you share contact that people could get in touch with you?
The easiest way to get a hold of me is, well, in a small town, the easiest way people get a hold of me is by knowing exactly where I'll be 34 hours a week.
Right, you know,
if the store is open, I'm here, and they track me down for all kinds of reasons. You know, do you need your car washed? What's going on with your house? Did you hear about such and such? So that's one way to get a hold of me, 17 East Madison in Iola, Kansas. But beyond that, southwindcycle@gmail.com goes directly to me. I think my cell phone has definitely escaped containment. So 913-205-3073 is another way to get a hold of me. And then, of course, you know, I'm in downtown Iola, Kansas, 5 days a week. In season, it's 7 days a week, but, you know, I'm not here.
Ben, you're so cool. You're so cool. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, listeners, thank you for listening to Bicycle Retail Radio. The podcast is designed specifically for the bicycle industry. If it's your first episode, take time, listen to the past episodes. You can support the show by first subscribing and then share your favorite episodes with friends and online. Special thanks to MBDA Development Director Rochelle Scouten for the editing and promotional graphics. We appreciate your support. Thank you for listening. See you back here soon. And with this, we go.
This has been Bicycle Retail Radio by the National Bicycle Dealers Association. For more information on membership and member benefits, join us at nbda.com.